So Zen Master Lin Shi said, according to my way of seeing, there is nothing that is not deep and wonderful. There is nothing that is not liberated. According to my way of seeing, there is nothing that is not deep and wonderful. There is nothing that is not liberated. So the middle of winter and the wind is blowing and blowing. Such cold. And this wind blows on its own will. Doesn't seem to get tired of blowing. Seems several days now it's been like this. We human beings sit together inside houses with the great blessing of furnaces or fireplaces and quite warm and cozy in here. And we are well into our third week of this training period. This is our annual, what we call coming and going, Sesshin. And we do this in honor of the tradition started by the Buddha when during the rainy season he would gather his disciples together. The roads were too muddy and too difficult to travel, so the community would come together to study and practice. Traditionally these study and practice periods are called angos, and it lasts 3 months. But for us, we say 3 weeks. As part of our commitment here in Boundless Way Zen, our commitment to find a way to approach Zen practice that honors the lives of all of us. Most of us will not be monks or nuns. Most of us cannot leave our life for 3 months. All of us sitting in this room today in some way have left our life. Some of us just came this morning. Others of us came many days ago. But we gather here together to study and practice this great matter of life and death. In Buddhism, we call it the Dharma. The Dharma is the teaching. We say this path of Zen is a path of liberation. A path of awakening. And this path is not like any other path. Most paths, all you need is a map. In fact, you don't even need a map. You just need to know the end destination. Right? And you plug it into the GPS. I want to go here. And then it shows you how to get here. So our end destination in Zen is here. And the question is, how do we get here? How do we find our way into this moment? And the wisdom of this tradition is part of the way we find our way into this moment, is by gathering together. And by sitting still, this intention to slow down, to slow down, and then slow down. And as we sit still, of course, we can begin to notice how speedy the mind is, racing here and there. We can both appreciate the endless generativity of the mind. You will never run out of thoughts. We are all rich in ideas, rich in mental activity. And this habit of the mind, or this function, this elegant functioning of the mind, what an astonishing mass of red flesh we have in our skulls. This great miracle of nature. Some of the smartest human beings of the planet are devoting their lives to trying to understand, even in a rudimentary way, how does this brain work? Where does an idea come from? Where does a feeling come from? How does sight happen? How does taste happen? And yet this effortless functioning, each one of us relies on it without thinking. You get up in the morning and your feet know how to find the floor. And the soles of your feet know how to feel the cold floor. And you, if you're like me, you stagger your way into the bathroom. And if you're lucky, your body knows how to pee. Right? Sit on the toilet. Stand, your preference. Actually, I find in the morning sitting is much better. Then you don't have to worry. Well, for some of us that's not an issue, but quite a miraculous thing. We think we're doing our business to get somewhere else. Well, I'll take care of this, and then I'll get on with my life. Then I'll get to the real good stuff. There is nothing that is not deep and profound. We don't even, and again, if we're lucky, we don't even have to think about it. Of course, there are times in our life where peeing and pooping are quite an issue. No laughing matter when it's not working. But usually this functioning goes on, we don't even notice. Linji, in another place, says, my friends, you must be your usual selves. Please be your usual selves. So we punch the coordinates into the GPS and the coordinates are here. And then we get no instruction. Or we get contradictory instruction. Go here. No, go there. try hard. No, don't try hard. It's not inside. It's not outside. Seek nothing. Clarify your intention. We are given contradictory instructions. And the reason we practice together in silence is that there are no viable instructions. There are no instructions you can rely on. Because all instructions come from somewhere else. They hit the mind, and then the mind makes it into something, and then the mind is off to the races. Meanwhile, the wind keeps blowing, not caring at all whether we are warm or cold. And the thousands and millions of cells in our body, each cell its own universe, each cell its own intelligence. So in some way we say the intelligence of the body, the seat is in the brain, but actually the brain is everywhere. And each cell knows how to receive nourishment, how to take in a molecule of glucose, and how to work with that molecule so that a little bit of glucose gives its gift, this gift of life. And Lin Shi says, everywhere is deep and wonderful. And yet most of the time we're wondering where our life is. We are looking for this deep and wonderful as we skate along the surface. So how do we find our way here? There is no place that is not liberated. We find our way here by sitting still. We find our way here by vowing to turn toward what is arising, to turn, we say, turn the light inward. This inward is not inward as opposed to outward. This is the inward that is the whole universe is right here. This great life that has no fixed form. In one koan I was recently looking at, it's from the Blue Cliff Record, and Yunmen, another wonderful Chinese Zen master, he says, everyone has his own light shining continuously, now as of old. Everyone has his own light shining continuously, now as of old. It cannot be seen or known. It cannot be seen or known. If you try to see it, everything is darkness. What is your light? Everyone has his own light shining continuously now as of old. It cannot be seen or known. If you try to see it, everything is darkness. What is your light? So this light or this life of the moment cannot be seen or known. We cannot stand outside of this. We cannot perceive it or receive it as an object. One teacher said, it is not the light that we can see, but the light by which we see. This is the light of our life, the energy appearing now as the arising of thoughts, appearing now as ruminating over what happened and what will happen. This utterly creative life has no preference, will take any form. And so whatever form we take it to be, it appears in this form, the form of a nice sunny day, and we think, okay, nice sunny days are it. I will only look for them. Well, and so nice sunny days come sometimes. But if that is all we are looking for, we miss the rest of our life. And I suppose our practice in Zen is this vow not to miss our life. Not to come to the end of our life and say, oh, I wish I had. I wish I knew. But to, in this moment, to find our way here. Another passage that we read from Lynchy, another part that has been sticking with me is Lynchy says, you must enact this immediately. And for most of the retreat, I've heard that as a Zen master sort of scolding, like, come on, get with it. You must do it now. But this morning, as I was thinking about this talk and what I might said, it turned for me to, you must do it immediately because there is no other time you can do it. If you're listening to these words and thinking, well, yeah, that's interesting. I think maybe when I get home, I'll try that. Or maybe at the end of the period, I'll work on that. I know in walking, I think I'll really do this. But you must, you can only enact this immediately. And the wonderful message of Zen is that you can enact this immediately. There is no need to wait. There is no possibility of waiting. This is not something that will be different if you sit for a retreat or a period or a decade or a lifetime. But that at this moment, this place of depth and wonder, this place of full of life and terror, and sadness, and joy, and dullness. It appears in every form. God is willing to inhabit every form. No holding back. The reading from Hongzhi says the fields... In mountain groves, grasslands, and woods, the truth has always been exhibited. We could say on streets and sidewalks and parking lots, the truth has always been exhibited. And this invitation to happiness, this happiness that is the happiness of being present with our life, unconditional happiness, is possible for us. And every time we turn to this moment, every time we consider the possibility that this might be it. And Linji urges us not to seek elsewhere. Give up looking somewhere else. And this loving invitation to the liberation of this moment, the freedom of the particularness of this breath, to this place of depth and wonder. According to my way of seeing, there is nothing that is not deep and wonderful. There is nothing that is not liberated. Thank you. So I invite you to sit comfortably. And now is the time for our Dharma dialogue. So, questions, observations, appreciations. Steve.
Yeah, I was caught and I stumbled pretty hard on something you said about no instruction being worthwhile, no instruction being meaningful. Is that a reasonable...
Yeah.
Well, it caught me because it seems like that's a contradiction, David.
Oh, no.
And I don't like contradiction.
And still you come here to Zen.
But I think the rest of it was worth listening to.
See, there's where you're wrong.
And this wonderful interplay in your talk, I think what it reminded me of is in mathematics the implicit and the explicit. Uh-huh. It's almost as if as human beings we're so dazzled by the explicit. Mm-hmm. The wind howls, the beautiful jewel-like quality sometimes of everything around us, along with the horrible despair and sadness that sometimes grips us, that I think that explicit sometimes just overwhelms our ability to appreciate the implicit. Mm-hmm. And I think that what I've really appreciated about this practice is the demand to look at the implicit. So that's what I wanted
And say just a little bit more about this implicit. What is that? How would you describe that or point to that?
Well, okay, if you don't mind my, for a minute or two. As a scientist, okay, we examine in a very formal way, okay? Yeah. So there are hypotheses and then testing of hypotheses and so on and so forth. And so there's this sometimes, not sometimes, I see things sometimes in the philosophy of science, like, there is nothing else. Okay? There is only...
stuff.
Yeah. Okay, there's only the material.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, great, okay. Great. I get it.
But they're missing something.
Yeah.
Okay? They are truly...
Yeah.
When if that is the philosophy, if that's your only philosophy, then you are truly missing something.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay? So that's what I'm trying to say, Dave.
Great.
Okay? Yeah. I can, you know, this goes on.
No, no.
No, this is great. This is great. You know, I'm so happy that you said this, because I think that you bring up two different points, really, the difficulty with understanding a teaching that says no instruction is... I can't remember the word you used.
It was really...
It was
I thought I really hit the nail on the head.
So much so that my brain just went...
There's no instruction manual.
No instruction manual.
Well, that's for sure. And one of the reasons is, I think, something that you're pointing to, Steve, that everybody in this room is really different in terms of how we encounter the world. And some of us actually start out focused on the implicit and miss the explicit. I know it's hard to believe that there are people like that, but I know some of them very intimately. And it's just wonderful that this is universal medicine, no matter what we happen to be caught. Everyone's caught in a view. Every one of us is caught in a view. And this is what we've been talking about. Lindsay really points that out big time, all the time. And we can't just say, I'm caught in a view, I'm going to have another view. All right, what's for breakfast? You know, instead we go, really, this is a view? This isn't reality? There's something else? And I think you're pointing to your own discovery of that. You know, all your life, right, explicit is it. And I know people like this, of course. I worked at a medical school for a long time. and to understand this other thing, this implicit that you're pointing to, and have it, like, just make your heart open. And then, you know what happens? The view shifts, and everything's about the implicit. And the explicit is a load of crap. And so part of this is, I think I say this all the time, is having flexibility of view. You know, just being willing to see that our view, our thinking is a view. Our way of understanding life has to be a limited view. So the instruction manual, if and there are instruction manuals, you know, but they're continually contradictory. We talked about this last night. Lindsay keeps saying, it's this, it's this, it's this, and then he says, no, it's not, it's this. And Dogen does that. And every Zen teacher, Yunmen does that. And David does that. And everybody does it who teaches the Dharma, because language is dualistic. So we can't ever... So the instruction manual would be infinite. And it is.
Yeah, here it is. Here's the instruction manual.
Thank goodness. There we go.
That's right. You only have to read a little bit of it. Just the piece that comes to you. All the instructions are contained. Breathe in, breathe out. Ah, instruction received. Comprehended.
Yeah, so I don't think I'm ever going to be able to get the image out of my mind of you stumbling into the bathroom.
I'm really sorry.
Debating whether to stand.
Welcome to my life.
Can
here.
I just interrupt you, sir? I heard standing on the toilet. That shocks me. No wonder you closed the door.
Just adds to the degree of difficulty. For someone of my training, this is not really a problem.
Anyway, sorry, Camden. Just wanted to give you another view.
Yeah. That's honestly all I wanted to say.
So you have received the teaching.
Yes, you no longer idolize the Roshi.
Everything can be turned into an idealization. I want to be like David.
What would David do?
Who would David do? Bump into a wall.
And I just want to say, go back to this implicit, because I think Lin Shi is talking about what we miss. So he keeps saying, you who are listening to this talk are Buddha, the one who is listening. So usually we're aware of the words, and I'm concentrating on the meaning, but this happens only because there's this brilliant functioning of voice waves and brains and, you know, this receiving, this touching and being touched in the tongue. It's called tasting. Oh, it's sour. Well, this implicit in these six senses, everything is here, and we go beyond it. We say, oh yeah, I am cold. I am confused. We add the I. And I think he's saying there's something that is not about the I that is functioning and sustaining us, that it's we cannot see. I love that Yun Men, you cannot know or see this. Right? Because if it's truly implicit, the minute we see it, it becomes explicit.
Yeah. I loved what you said about how it's not the light we see, it's the light we see with.
Excuse
me. Yeah. Is there any contradiction between ordinary life and spiritual life?
In the Zen tradition, we say no. That's the big one. Because
they are different. Yeah.
Well, that's in the traditional way, and in one way, yeah, we can say, yeah, they are different. But in another way, this teaching is that every moment is full of the Spirit, full of the Holy, so that we enter into this sacred relationship with just walking. We think, oh, God is somewhere else. And this thing, in everything we do, every, you know, touch the floor, hear the sound.
And the rest must be released?
Everything is part of it. So if we hold tight and say, well, this is spiritual, this is ordinary, then we're making a division that isn't there with
Social life and individual life. That's what I mean. You know? Not spiritual or ordinary.
So social life and individual life.
I perceive something that the other cannot.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Right. That's why. Yeah. But there's a contradiction between what I perceive and other perceive.
You know what's interesting about what you're saying is that you're pointing to this is a view that is it's like the view that human beings have everywhere in the world.
Right.
That there are two different categories of everything. Mm-hmm. Right? So we'll put me and you into two different categories. I can't see out of your eyes, right? You can't see out of my eyes.
Your
that's true. Let me finish, though, if you wouldn't mind. This is what we ordinarily do. And when we make other kinds of dualities, we call them, social life and contemplative life, right? Mm-hmm. Spiritual life, being by ourselves, being with others. This is constant categorization. And that is, we call that the form world, the world of form, you know, rupa. It's the world of form.
Yeah.
And not but, and not in opposition to it. There's a world where all of these things are seen as the arising of the Spirit. Everything, without exception, yes. And so these are two views. Like what I was talking about before, there's the form view and the non-dual view.
Yeah.
And what we do in Zen is we bring those two views together to become one view. So the floor is the floor, and it's everything. It's everything. And that's if your mind can wrap around that, that's great, but usually our minds can't wrap around it. So through practice, through this sitting practice, this knowing arises in us. Yeah.
Excuse me, I have another question. Your perception depends on your being.
Yeah.
You agree with me?
Yeah.
So everyone has own being an entity. That's why it's a complex universe, you know?
Exactly. How wonderful, right? Yeah. So there's a complexity of views everywhere. And... dot, dot, dot. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for speaking. And these things become clearer to us the more we practice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't believe me.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Anyone else?
Back to it.